It's April 21st, 2014, and this is episode 75 of Free to Play. My name is Brian Belita, and I'm joined by Mark Bradshaw.
I was given a Nexus 7 tablet by Ubisoft just for appearing on this podcast.
That was me. I gave you a Famfung Blexus 8.
You know, that explains all the battery acid that was on my hands.
That probably would. Also, Imran Khan.
I was given a Nexus tablet just for stealing Mark's Nexus tablet.
But that's still not. It's a Fexus.
I choose to believe.
You choose to believe.
I had a Nexus tablet before this started, so I may have stolen my Nexus tablet.
Yeah, that's possible. I also have a Nexus tablet now, so it may actually be your Nexus tablet.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah.
Okay. And now that he is fully recovered from PAX, Dave Owen.
Yeah, I don't have a Nexus tablet. I didn't get one at all, but I wish I had.
All I got was this PAX flu.
Yeah, pretty much. That's pretty much standard, par for the course there. On going to that event.
Did you really? Did you return home sick?
Sniffles.
Okay. But. Yeah. Well, that could have been that damn temperature change too. Home weather. You're drunk. And Matt Pierce.
I'm still repping my HP touchpad.
WebOS the one that they sold for like
WebOS represent.
Yeah, I bought it for $500.
Yeah.
And then they dropped to $100 the next week.
Oh, jeez.
I got my $400 back.
Okay. Oh, I was going to say that's like the worst possible situation.
You know what? For 2 years, it's been a damn good tablet.
Yeah.
And what about after those 2 years?
It starts to feel slow.
Okay. Is it no longer a good tablet?
No, it still works well. It feels slow compared to other tablets. But okay. I got my work tablet approved, so I'll hopefully be podcasting from a Microsoft Surface Pro 2 week.
Sometimes I think it's built in, just like, all right, after 2 years, just start slowing the OS down so people feel like upgrading.
I'm having that problem with my laptop recently where it's like slow as hell, but I can't rationalize ever buying a new one because I use my laptop, but if I didn't have my laptop, maybe that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Right.
So I knew this guy who used to work in IT, made a simple little Windows program called speed.exe, and it just pops up this little dialogue window with it just has a label that says speed, and there's a slider with no numbers on it. It starts on the left, and he goes, oh, this is what happens. Somebody set your speed to low. And then he slides it to the right and hits okay, and the thing quits, and he's like, you'll be fine now.
And they feel better.
Everybody he worked with thought that thing worked. They thought that there was some internal setting in Windows that set their speed low, and that he was opening this thing up and setting it back to fast, and then
just so he could.
The placebo effect. Like there were these people who insisted that their computers were running slow after 2 years. So he would go in there, he'd set the speed to fast right in front of them, and they thought their computers were faster.
That's brilliant.
Kind of the same thing, but a friend of mine used to have a computer repair business, and when he, like, somebody's like, okay, my computer's too slow, I need you to fix it. So he went in there and he did all the spyware stuff, and it probably did run a lot faster after that, but the person didn't notice. So, like, this is still really slow. So he opened the case up, and he got the fan trigger, like the high speed, high, low, medium thing, and just turned it from low to high. So, like, it could be a little bit louder, but it should be fixed now.
Oh, my God.
They totally accepted it.
So does your friend's name happen to be Adam Schran?
It is not.
No. I'm talking about Matt's friend.
Oh,
made
no.
The speed thing. No,
I don't even remember his name. It was so
Adam Schran is the guy that owns finallyfast.us. You may be familiar with their software, Finally Fast, finallyfast.com. My computer's finally fast.
There was some Left 4 Dead 2 game where you were going finallycharge.com, and then like for the rest of the game, that was just the only thing we all said.
Oh man, I'm sad we didn't record that. But anyway, so we're here tonight. We're going to be talking about things. And then after the break, we're going to talk about Dave's first Illiterous Book Club pick. And that was Magical Time Bean's Escape Goat. The first one, not the second one that just came out. But we'll be talking about that first one, which Ian Stocker, the one-man studio who makes up Magical Time Bean, gave us all keys, which is super generous of him to do that. So we all played his game and we're going to talk about it. So, but first off, so I think a thing that is crazy is that I guess you can buy games through Twitch now.
Can you?
Yeah,
sort of.
What can you buy games through now?
Yeah. What? Right, that's true. Like, you can probably, my refrigerator. Oh, I'll just buy the new thing.
If it has a browser, you can totally buy games to it.
Yeah.
So is Twitch actually selling the games, or do they just link you over to somebody who is?
So you, if you, I don't know. So the example that this Gamma Sutra article gives is that if you connect your Twitch account up to the, like, Nuclear Throne, Vlambeer's roguelike top-down shooter, kind of dual-stick shooter type thing, you can choose to purchase the game through Twitch, which gives you the ability to chat during, I guess, the Nuclear Throne dev streams or something.
Now, are you buying the game, or, like, are you buying, like, are they streaming the game on their servers and you're buying a video stream, or are you buying the game? You know, are they doing, like, an on-live sort of thing?
No, yeah, I mean, you're buying the actual game. Like, 60%, it says 60% of the revenue goes to Vlambeer via the purchase. That's not really, yeah. Those aren't really good numbers for Twitch there.
Yeah, no, it's not really. Yeah.
So if you buy Nuclear Throne in this example through Twitch, 60% of that revenue goes to the to the developers, as opposed to 70% through Steam, as opposed to 90% through Humble Bundle.
What they should do is when you stream a game, you should just be able to, like, put your Amazon referral link in here. You'll get, like, let's say 5 cents
the
from
Amazon.
Everyone who buys
Welcome
it from there.
Welcome to the Amazon.
Or you get, like, $2 in Amazon credit if somebody right. buys the game from Amazon. That. Or through your link.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of...
I guess it makes sense because, you know, if you just load up, like, how many times have you just, like, watched someone else playing a video game on Twitch TV? Right? I mean, you're watching Hearthstone, you're watching League of Legends, you're watching Street Fighter. This happens a lot. And then they switch to another game, or, like, you're on Twitch TV and you see, like, streams of other games. Say, hey, I want to play that video game. This looks nice. And it's sitting there, and you can just buy the game. So I guess that makes sense right. on that
that's,
level.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point to be able to have, like, a, you know, on anybody that is streaming your game, you know, because you can set which game you're streaming. You don't have to. So, I mean, obviously the person who's streaming would have to set, okay, hey, I'm playing Nuclear Throne or whatever game. And then, yeah, to have a, basically anyone who's streaming it, have a buy this game link on the side. With the gigantic popularity of streaming games, I could see that being a thing. I mean,
you take a look at, like, the way Giant Bomb does its Quick Look stuff. I mean, a lot of people use Quick Looks as reviews. Like, they don't
which
have
is dumb.
Which is dumb, but some people do. But, you know, they don't have Quick Looks for everything. Twitch has everything. There is somebody like streaming FTL right now. If you really want, that's actually
yeah.
popular. Like, you said, I wonder how the patch is working for FTL. You see somebody live streaming FTL, so I'll go ahead and buy it. I like this game. It looks good.
So now that there's no barrier for, like, consoles to get on there, like, people can just stream whatever.
Yeah. Nope. So the one additional thing, at least with this, with Nuclear Throne in particular, is that when you buy it through Twitch, you get access to their dev streams. It says, here we get some Steam level gamification things. So you get Vlambeer emoticons and a subscription to Vlambeer's Twitch TV channel.
Right. Yeah. Essentially, so, you get a subscription, a free subscription to their channel for buying the game. And that comes, Twitch subscriptions come with emoticons and chats. And
has that been around a while?
Subscriptions, yeah, for a couple of years at least.
I didn't even know that. I guess I've never really delved that deep.
Like, there are definitely people making a living off of Twitch subscriptions right now.
Wow.
Yeah, there's the Hearthstone stuff. There's, like, if you look, there's, like, a ton of people just streaming Hearthstone right now and making decent money, like being like 40,000 people. If you have, like, mm-hmm. a decent percentage of them subscribers dropping like $5 a month, you're doing all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to give them something, you know. I mean, you're trying to entice them in. A lot of channels will do, you know, subscriber only streams, subscriber only chat. Some of the big folks do that because chat just gets, so you got 40,000 people in a channel. Everybody can't chat, pay to chat, get these emoticons. And in this case, also get this game potentially.
And, right. And a lot of times, like, if you're in chat, then it behooves whoever's playing or whoever's developing in this case to actually interact with chat.
So
if you want to learn about the strategy of the game, you're like a pro player, you can just have a direct line to that pro player by spending $5.
I feel like this kind of ties in maybe a little bit with, I mean, you guys are surely familiar with Patreon,
I think it is.
Patreon, okay, you know, which a bunch of people like Matthew Leese, UK guy, part of the Shut Up Show, Shut Up, Sit Down, a bunch just over the last, I don't know, half a year.
Yeah,
it's the number of people. I don't know how long Patreon has been around, but it's really exploded. And I feel like this kind of ties into that, because like if you fund what they're doing, in this case, you know, in Patreon's example, it's, you know, it's journalists, and you're, you know, you're paying that NDA, maybe you get access to an exclusive video in the case of like Matt Leese, and with this you get access to, you know, this extra exclusive content, which you know, which streaming is kind of growing, so that might be a thing that you want. But I think there are a lot of devs. I mean, I don't know if Vlambeer also puts up their dev streams on YouTube or anything. I know there are a lot of people that tend to do that.
They do, yeah. Their art guy, Paul Veer, who does most of their games.
Oh, that's right.
Streams regularly. Yeah, Paul Veer streams regularly. And Jay, I forget his name. Whatever.
Why do I want to say Cutler? Who's Jay Cutler?
Jay Cutler is a football player.
Yes.
It's just
really funny because I don't watch fucking football at all.
It's a great quarterback name, so that's why you're.
Yeah, it is. But their main programmer streams pretty often too.
Okay.
On the Vlambeer channel.
Yeah, and I imagine there's going to be like some people who want like to know the intricacies of Photoshop without spending a lot of money to do it. So you watch an actual like professional guy using Photoshop and get a direct line to him.
So, right. And that, I mean, so that would you, well, I guess if Adobe would hit them, then you get a little thing on the side, subscribe to Adobe Photoshop or Adobe Creative Suite or whatever.
Yeah, spend $600 on this. Yeah, sure.
So I wonder how many, you know, game companies or I guess even software, if Twitch goes that way, are using this feature.
I mean, right now it sounds almost from reading the article as if this is almost an unintended use of the Twitch Connect API.
Mm-hmm.
That if you sign into their website, into Vlambeer's website with your Twitch account,
right?
Then then buy the game from them through your Twitch account. They are somehow linking you. It's almost,
that's so weird.
It's sketchy. I mean, it looks to me like the details are sketchy,
right,
at this point as to who's actually doing the selling. Because in the update, Twitch very plainly says we're not selling it. Vlambeer's selling it.
Yeah,
they're just using our Twitch Connect API in a very creative way. So
yeah,
but. If Twitch is smart, tomorrow they will announce that they are now selling games through Twitch.
Right.
Officially.
Yeah, that's...
If it gets you good deals, I mean, whatever, more than
merrier. Right, yeah, it's true. I mean, if it may be an extra, you know, bothersome step, but...
Well, the sad thing is like, I'm not going to buy over Twitch unless it has a Steam key, because everyone's on Steam and that's where my UI is. So.
That's where the barrier is for me. I will... Have as many stores as you want. That's the competition that's great. It's just that, like, if you're on, like, oh, this is my own client. I'm on Desura. Well, you can only find me there. It's like, I don't care that much. I'll see you on Greenlight.
Well, I mean, and I think, I know, Dave, you use Desura quite a bit, right?
Oh, yeah, I use it. Yeah, but it is.
Desura, it's great.
Yeah,
it's just,
it is, you know, I got a survey from Origin yesterday. And they asked me what I could do to recommend, you know, get Origin to recommend it to my friends more. And I said straight up, just plain as day, you know, no veiled language.
Yeah.
I don't need another digital library to manage.
Yeah.
You know, just period. I play Titanfall because I have to, but I don't want to buy anything else through you because I'm already on two with Desura and this and Steam. I don't want a third. I don't care how good your sales are. I just can't. I don't have room in my life right now for another digital storefront. Okay.
Well, I don't have room in my taskbar, and that might as well be. I don't have room in my life.
Well, like the way it is, like right now, like I'll sit down at my computer at night, and, you know, computer boots up, I open up Chrome, I click my little Steam button, and then I go to my start menu. I open up Origin. I go to my start menu. I open up Battle.net in case my brother's playing Diablo 3. So I mean, that's three right there. And it gets a little overwhelming.
And they all have different chats, so I can't like.
Well, see, but the thing is, like, all my friends on those are all the same friends, and we use Steam to chat. I mean, that's just the way it goes. Unless we're actively in a game.
Like, there's been times where you've you've messaged me on Steam saying, "Hey, let's go play Titanfall."
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, and I haven't gone that extra step of like adding Titanfall to Steam to have the overlay.
It doesn't work. Not that I've been able to find. Doesn't.
Yeah. But like, you know, and if I'm playing Diablo 3 with my brother late at night, you know, usually we're on just, you know, Skype or Steam chat chatting anyways. You know, so I don't even need to worry about typing. Although so if we are playing Diablo 3, or if I'm playing Titanfall on my second monitor, I'll have like a Steam chat window open just so I can see if anybody messages me on Steam to say they want to play something else.
So let's say some bright individual comes up with a way to like combine like your Steam library and your hypothetical Origin library and your Destro library, and they're even able to like hook into like PSN and Xbox and Virtual Console, and not like of course play games on there, but maybe like hook onto the storefront and buy games, or at least manage your library.
Like a trillion for game clients.
Yeah, like that. Yeah. That's something I'd pay money for.
Yeah, right? I would give like, $5 to whoever makes that.
I'd like $20, like whatever. I would pay for that. Just manage everything in one page, like Steam, and one chat client. Yeah, it's,
well, and
I'm sure it's a lot of work, but that's something that needs to be done.
And I've brought this up before, but there's somebody who made it a prolific tweet. You know, I forget what game it was. It was saying, you know, hey, this game is now on Steam. Or for some people, on PC for the first time ever. And it's, yes, you know, it's a game that's been out for like 2 years. and I feel really bad. I feel really bad because Steam is sort of the, you know, the place. You know, if it's not on Steam, there are so many people that are like, I kind of don't really want to bother with it. And it's a shame because there are a lot of good games. And I think Dave probably knows that better than almost all of us do.
Oh, yeah. Well, Escape Goat, I've originally played it through Desir before it was ever on Steam. So,
oh, that's right. Yeah. When did it come out on? What was the difference between those
2011. Two? And then I think sometime in 2012, it was greenlit.
Yeah.
So like mid 2011, it was 6 to 8 months before it was on Steam.
Yeah.
I kind of wonder, it's like, if we're at this point, we're not willing to deal with like more than two like PC game clients. I understand like these two markets aren't exactly the same, like the console market and the PC market aren't exactly the same. But what does that say for like Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo? Like, if we're not willing to deal with Steam and something else, are we willing to deal with Steam and PlayStation Network? It's like,
we didn't even mention Uplay and Games for Windows Live.
Yeah.
Uplay is starting to get annoying for me because they still have their games on Steam. They still have that separate client. Yes. So like, for example, I got Far Cry 3 with my GPU and like, getting that code redeemed on Uplay was the biggest headache.
The bullshit about Uplay is that you can play a game on Uplay, and you just have like Uplay running like in the client. The last game that Uplay played still counts as being played. So like your Ubisoft games have like an ungodly inflated like hourly count to them, like 200 hours for like Far Cry Blood Dragon.
You didn't play Far Cry Blood Dragon for 200 hours? I did.
Okay, 500.
I guess you didn't max your bro, all right?
I maxed my bros and bro.
Play first. Harder, Mark.
Their bros have moved on, sir.
Yeah, they're all in Bro Force now. But yeah, no, it's, I mean, it's, I don't know. I mean, and then of course, there's Rockstar Social Club. For any,
just
stop. You know,
just stop. Just like, if you're a game developer, well, I mean, stop. We don't,
I mean, if you want to have some, like, optional thing below the Steam layer, that's fine.
Sure.
Like, I don't care to use it, but no, if I,
some
maybe
of them
I will.
Value. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't put stuff that I need in there. Yeah.
It's going to be annoying when, like, say, Dragon Age 3 comes out, and we're just going to be like, yeah, you need this again, don't you? Mm-hmm. And that's going to be like, I could also just not play Dragon Age 3.
Yeah.
Or buy it on a console or something.
I thought you just said Bionic console.
Yes, the Bionic console. The bionic parts were made of its old wife.
Yeah. It seems like the only way something like Uplay could ever work for real is if it was like a web. You know how like there are websites out there that let you sign in with Twitter or sign in with Facebook?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like that's do that with Steam and PSN and Xbox Live. Just have like, you sign in with that identity and link them together, and that's you.
It seemed like it was kind of going that direction for a little while when Steam was on PS3, but then nothing ever happened with it.
Yeah.
Well, that's sort of like do you guys know what Gravatar is?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a global avatar. So I guess, you know, like you upload your image or whatever in one place, and you can, you know, log in with that Gravatar, and it'll automatically pull in your information or your photo or whatever everywhere. So there are some things that have attempted to, you know, to be like a global sign in.
Yeah.
But you know, it's just none of the third party, or you know, in the case third party and relative to this single sign on. Want that, you know, they want their own thing, they want to click, which is fine. I mean, some of that stuff has its own value, like with Rockstar Social Club, you know, you could just upload a video right from the game, you know, in GTA 4 or something like that.
I mean, there was that Heartbleed thing recently, and then it, like every site I went to was like, hey, God, change your password. And at some point I'm like, I'd rather just someone steal my password than have to remember all these.
Right. And then, you know, just get notified. And yeah,
so like, no, if I'm logging into Steam for everything, then someone steals that Steam password, and that's like everything. Yeah. Like, who do I go to contact about getting all that stuff fixed?
Well, it's funny because somebody, it wasn't related to her. This was before Heartbleed, but so it's a little unrelated. But like, I got an email said like, hey, somebody has tried to log into your, you know, your mortgage account, which is with a separate bank than like I have my bank. So I'm like, that's fine. The worst he can do is pay my mortgage. Fucking let him. So. Yeah, I mean, there's some important things that you want to switch out and stuff, but I'm sure there's some that I missed because I was just like, oh, I just don't want to deal with this right now. Like, ever since I reset my Kickstarter password, I think I've just like reset it 5 times in the last 2 weeks just because I keep forgetting it. Which is why I should use a passphrase and not a passcode.
Yeah.
Passphrases are good.
I'm confident that every time I change my Facebook password, it doesn't actually stay changed, because there's no way I forget what it is every single time.
No, you're exactly right. There was one time where, like, I don't know, I reset my iPhone or something. I was like, all right, I'll set a new password. I set it down. 5 minutes later,
gone.
Oh fuck.
Yep.
Oh shit. And of course, like, I turn on the thing that if you log in the wrong 10 times, it'll just wipe the fucking iPhone.
That's not a smart thing.
It was really bad. It was really, really bad.
I mean, one of those things for Final Fantasy 14 where like, you have to go to your phone and like get a key phrase from there and input that. It only lasts like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Like that. I feel like if I want to play that game and for some reason I don't have access to my phone, I'm completely fucked.
Yeah. I forget who it was that I was talking to on Twitter, but they were like, at one point is, you know, how complicated is our password security going to get? And I was like, and eventually you're just going to need to pull it from your 400 page novel. What is the third word in the fourth paragraph on the 872nd page of your novel? You just write your own novel, and that's how you get your passwords.
What pisses me off is when service will be like, that password isn't secure enough, choose another. It's like, fuck you. That's my decision if it's not secure enough.
If it's not
you
secure what, enough, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, at the end, there.
You know what I think is the biggest bullshit I've seen from this? My bank told me that my username wasn't secure enough. Fuck you. That's not encrypted. It doesn't matter how many. It wanted me to put numbers and special characters in my username. God. It's like, there is zero chance I will ever remember this username. Why can't I just use my email?
What's account? Really bad is when something like a bank has a maximum character limit. I'm like, no, what? Why are you trying to make me less secure?
Oh, the worst. Oh, we put limits on what characters you can use in your password, but not normal human being limits. It's going to be letters, numbers, no spaces, and like three different.
I hate no spaces. I always throw a space in because I feel like that throws people off.
Well, apparently, like, some of the most secure passwords you could possibly have are phrases because you can't decrypt them through a
dictionary. No, I hate to mention XKCD. I don't know. I don't read it regularly, but I know a lot of people ask for it. But there was one where they're like, throughout the years, we've successfully taught people that the most secure way is the hardest thing to remember. So, you know, the thing that is easiest to crack is the hardest to remember. And the thing that is the hardest to crack is the easiest to remember, like upside down horse transistor. Like, that's not, no, that's going to be hard to crack. So I've started actually.
But meanwhile, like these guys that demand like special characters and all this shit in their password, I'm not going to remember that.
Yeah.
So I have to write it down. And
sticky note it to the side of your monitor.
Yeah.
Or use the same password everywhere.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Or keep it underneath my keyboard. Like,
see, I found a good way. Like, I've just recently started using passphrases for things. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, but I have like a password algorithm. So like depending on the name of the site I'm logging into, the password have similar characteristics, but but obviously different. So they're not the exact same password, but they have similar characteristics that I fall back on, like drawing out a design on my keyboard, which gets really fucked up if I'm using like a phone and it doesn't have a keypad on the side. I'm like, oh God, how do I make an X? It's 1, 3. So anyways, passwords.
Yep.
Yep.
So games, all right.
Basically, change all your passwords because Heartbleed probably fucked everything up.
Yeah, there was
And so, as near as I can tell, Heartbleed destroyed the internet. So just accept the fact that everything's going to be stolen and just like use password. Just the phrase password as your password and just accept that. Just
It affected Nitrobeard content. So we had to change the Amazon stuff.
Oh yeah, the AWS. Yeah. Good. I never heard back from Wes if he did that or not. So I guess he did.
We're probably fine.
We're okay.
Yeah, I'm sure it's fine.
We should. We probably should be talking about this on the
I
podcast.
changed the Jumpcast stuff, so I know that part's secure at least.
But anyway, so let's see other things that happened. I guess speaking of Uplay, Ubisoft was playing when they gave journalists, I don't know, a free Nexus 7 tablet at an exclusive Watch Dogs. Watch Dogs.
Watch
Watch
Dogs.
Dogs.
Watch Dogs is
Scrubs.
a better game.
Scrubs. Yeah. Watch Dogs preview event in Pelly. So I guess I don't know.
So they
It's
flipped.
funny because I saw somebody like, "Hey, I just got this free thing," and then he posted up like a photo of the tablet with like "Watch Dogs is a piece of shit" written on it.
So there was this press event in Paris. I'm going to assume this wasn't for like this the European press. Like, presumably they flew in members of the press to this press event in
Right,
Paris.
exactly,
Or
yeah.
So they were already paying for like their room and board and to get them out there and then drop like a $250 tablet on their lap. Like
No, I
the
doubt that Ubisoft paid to fly out the press.
Yeah. Review events maybe. Preview events probably not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's funny because there's not really a good thing to do if you're a journalist coming out of there with Nexus 7. So I know there were a lot that said, I'm going to give it away to charity or whatever.
I
It's
wonder
just
how many would give it away to charity if they had not, if were not well known that a bunch of them got it.
You know what?
Right.
I'm not going to begrudge them that because it's
No.
video game reviewers are not paid like rock stars. And if somebody gives you a tablet and you have no use for it, fucking eBay that thing. No
Yeah.
one cares. Just,
Just be
you
upfront
know,
about it.
yeah, be
I
upfront.
received
Be
it.
like, yeah, I'm going to be upfront about the fact that Ubisoft gave me a free Nexus 7.
Right.
I don't want to hold that. I don't want to pretend like I'm totally and completely impartial.
Yeah.
But I don't
Well,
want them to take a vow of poverty.
though at some
But
point you do need to
they're.
like, we need to like delineate what the difference is between like swag you need for your job and swag that just, you know,
Well,
like presumably Watch Dogs is going to have some what do they call it? Second screen shit.
yeah. So you'd
Right.
need, I guess they would need that for, if they're going to review it, they would need. But of course they're
I
going to
mean
have a
that's.
tablet already. They have a phone or something, so.
Yeah,
I
I'm.
mean, yeah,
Not only
probably,
that, but
but.
they probably have a tablet set up for quick screenshots.
But at what point do you not like, do we say no press, our press copies, or people shouldn't get press systems, or.
Well, we have to, like, it's not really the only industry where this happens. It's like gift baskets full of like insanely
Yeah.
valuable
No,
things are
you're
given
right.
out,
You're
like
right.
Oscar-like winners and stuff like, well, not, but
Well,
just
it's.
people like in the seats.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, and game journalists, I guess, well, the good ones are usually pretty good about disclosing that kind of stuff and not well like did you guys the New York University Game Center hosted Jeff Gerstmann and had a talk with him, which was really, really good. If you get the chance, go watch it. I linked it on Twitter the other day. I'll try to remember to put it in the show notes or something. Because I go to Giant Bomb now and again, and I'll look like at a quick look or stuff. And I know on especially on the platforms where a bunch of us come from, there a lot of people just talking about Giant Bomb, Giant Bomb, Giant Bomb. And I never really clicked with me. Like I know, yeah, there's a joke about the guy being bad at video games when they're playing quick looks, which is totally fucking true. Anyways, so they hosted Jeff Gerstmann and he talked, I don't know, for like an hour and a half or something. And it was really, really good. That guy's really smart. And I had no idea because I've never really, I don't read a lot of reviews. I don't watch a lot of reviews.
Like Jeff needs to release a book. Like if he wrote a book on the video game industry, he probably has like two or three books in him. It'd be
Yeah.
amazing. I really want to hear
Yeah,
that.
he's just a really, really smart guy. And I don't know. I just had never really, that never really dawned on me until I watched this kind of, uncensored, unmixed, uncovered, I don't know, whatever, talk with Jeff Gerstmann. So anyways, he was talking about how, like, you know, how they get to pick and choose, obviously, what they want to review at Giant Bomb. And he was like, yeah, you know, but we're really good friends with, you know, with this company. So, you know, we're not going to do that. We're not going to review those games. So there are a lot of game journos that are, just good about disclosing that stuff. And I think they're obviously aware of it because, a lot of them are ingrained on the internet. And so they're aware that when shit goes down, Twitter, Carmack say? The unwashed mobs. Mm-hmm.
The mob.
The mob. You know, when something like that happens, the mob, they're aware and they jump on and make sure that shit gets called for. And
I don't know. I think part of the problem is that we make too much about reviews.
Yeah.
Like, yes.
Yeah. I don't think, I know, Brian, you don't think they matter at all. I think they matter a little.
Well, no. I think they matter. It's just that they don't factor into my decision on purchasing
a game. That's the thing. Like, they don't factor into yours or, like, anyone's here because we have better ways of getting that information, or we have a pretty good instinct, like, what's going to be a good video game or video game. Like, most people don't have that ability or those resources that we do.
But I don't think they go to reviews. I think the reviews are almost entirely confirmation bias at this point. That for if us. They're already like, they if someone's already being marketed towards on Call of Duty and they think they might want that, then they're like the only way a review is going to change their mind is if it's extremely low.
Well, and Jeff even talked about how they address reviews on their site and that how the quick looks they do. Are like a lot of people. It's just a better resource for people if they're looking on a some sort of input on a decision to buy a game. They'd much rather have just raw footage of somebody playing a game like they would than some sort of.
Well, that's what everybody always wanted out of a review. It's not the review score. It's what's this game like? Yeah. Tell me what this game is like.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's always been a schism within. I hate saying this because it sounds so Tumblr like, but the review community. Has been that.
Well, that's what I was always looking for when I read reviews in like EGM.
Like, should it be a description or review, or should it be about how the game made you feel?
It depends on what you want. Like, if you actually just want like games literature, like actually games criticism, then you want to get rid of the review score. If you're just like meanwhile, if you're just looking for the confirmation bias, like you said before, what you're just going to scroll down and say, okay, did it get an 8? If so, great. I love this review score. If I love the game.
I'm not taking a side on either side of that schism. Mm-hmm. Like, I totally get that some people want this objective analysis of the game, which is bullshit anyway. Right. And some people want how the game made me feel, which is also not thoroughly helpful.
And there's also definitely, like, two extremes. Like, it can't be... Some people just make back-of-the-box reviews, and then there's, like, the Tim Rogers style, here's 10 paragraphs about... Suda's jeans reviews.
Yeah, going to either extreme doesn't really help, but whenever I read reviews, I was more interested in reading the review than I was in the review score. And it always drove me nuts in EGM, when you get to that page that has just like a table of scores for all the stuff that didn't get a long form review, because that's way less helpful than the stuff that got an actual, here's what the game is like, here's what works and what doesn't.
Do you all remember a large number of episodes ago, Puppy Games created, I think, a Titan Attack?
That was a different company.
No.
Ultron and when Titan... The
Robotron.
They made a lot of like little tower defense and platformer games.
Yeah, like, they did.
Titan Attacks
Titan Attacks, I think that is it, yeah. So anyway, so he... one of those devs, they put out like an article saying like, the game demo is dead.
Yeah, I remember that.
Do you guys remember that? And one of the reasons he cited was because, I don't have to put the time and effort to make it a demo because there's somebody who's going to play the game, record a video, put it up online, and that's just as valuable as a resource as a demo. And I things went that way.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. We'll go back to Twitch TV.
I mean, much to my dismay, I still wish there were demos for things.
Well, that actually begs the question, why don't developers do that? Why don't they just record like 10 minutes of their game?
I was thinking that.
Like, I mean, they do dev docs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking that, especially for something like a Kickstarter. I mean, obviously, depending on how early, you know, the game is in development when it goes to Kickstarter. But for something like this game I talked about last episode, Armello, this digital board tabletop card and dice game, which still looks superb and still going. I think they're at like $135,000 out of their $200,000 goal. They have like 15 days left. But anyways, like if they just put up 5 minutes of gameplay, that would do wonders for them. And the Kickstarters that have done that, like that, it shows that done as well. And there's some that put up a little demo, which obviously helps. But
there's a game that's coming to Kickstarter soon called Hover, which, by the way, Brian, you should definitely check out.
Oh, yeah, I did see that. That's like the Mirror's Edge and
Jet Set Radio kind of
radio mix. There have been a couple games like that. Maybe I think Ryan Bloom linked Hover a while ago, or maybe it was something else. I don't know. But yeah, anyways, go on.
They wanted to have like footage before they put up the Kickstarter because they think like that game doesn't make sense as a screenshot.
Yeah.
You need to be able to see it in motion before, you know. Yeah. So that's why they've been launching the Kickstarter after they've worked on the game.
So I think it like just launched.
Did
it? Because it's already launched. It has 30 days to go. So
okay, so they must have just put it up.
Usually they launch with like a 30 or 31 day. Anyways, they're already at $20,000 of their $38,000 goal.
They announced Hideki Naganuma is doing the music, which is like a huge get.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder, like you brought the, we talked about Mirror's Edge just a little bit regarding this game. I was going back to Twitch TV. Mirror's Edge is a different experience depending on the skill level of the player involved. Like if you're just sitting there and like trying to grind through and trying to like just brute force your way through, Mirror's Edge is not a fun experience. I didn't have a lot of fun with Mirror's Edge, but the people who love Mirror's Edge just play it brilliantly.
Yeah.
So I wonder if like, if during that time of Mirror's Edge was relevant, if there was like a Twitch TV stream of it and people could just show, here's what you can do with this game. It is freaking amazing.
Yeah.
There's a number of games that I would just like, I would say, if you're going to watch a stream of that, just don't bother because like, let's say, so Gone Home is basically just an interactive story, sure. Right? But that interactive part is important.
It is.
You have to be there by the controller with seeing what's going through their own eyes.
Like you have to be the one looking up at that picture of your parents because that's what like that's you. Yeah. And so if you're watching a Twitch stream of that, I feel like you're missing out on half the experience.
Okay, yeah, this is the game that Ryan Bloom linked. Sorry.
But yeah, so I don't know. I don't think that streaming or videos will ever wholly supplant. Like,
well, you would hope they wouldn't. I mean, I want to hear people discuss why games work or what elements of games that could have been great were not great. That's the sort of thing that fascinates me.
I mean, we were talking about the divide earlier of the bullet or back of the box versus whatever. And I remember Arthur Gies like kind of infamously said, video games don't make him feel anything. So he's never going to review a video game like that. And it's like, that's not a review I want to read.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, if somebody's whole thing is like, well, this is in no way compatible with the view you have when you play video games, then that does me no good.
Well, why are you even interested in the media if it can't make you feel anything?
Hover looks super cool. Sorry, what is it? Revolt of Gamers, though. That's
a weird subject.
That is weird. And there's also a line in the, like the key points of the game. Listen to this. This is all right.
Before you point, I would like to point out that gamers are revolting. Waka waka.
Yeah.
They're rebelling.
Sorry.
All right. So this is a description point for Hover, Revolt of Gamers. A dynamical scenarization without interruptions.
Okay, I'm suddenly less confident on this
game. I'm thinking of, what did Ken Levine say about the games he wanted to make?
Dynamical?
Dynamical, narrative-driven. I forget. I don't remember what Ken Levine said. Anyways, so that looks cool.
Well, they are French. What's Ken's excuse, you know?
Yeah, that is true. All right, I'll let it. Yeah, that's fair.
So, like, one last thing about reviews is that I'm not interested in individual reviews so much as I am interested in, if I say the aggregate, I don't mean, like, a Metacritic. I mean that one thing everyone seems to agree on. Like, yeah, the frame rate's kind of shitty.
Right.
Like, there's one part of the, like, pretty much every Castlevania review mentioned, hey, there's this stealth section that really sucks, and lo and behold, it really sucked.
Yeah. Do we know anything about Dark Souls 2 on PC? If it's is it going to be need heavy modding? Well, not heavy, but
no,
is
they
it
said
need mod-
there was some like review copies of the PC version come out. People say it's fine. Like texture resolution is higher than consoles. Yeah, it doesn't look as good as it did in the previews, but it like
that. I saw somebody posting like some 1440p screenshots of Dark Souls, and it looked fucking gorgeous. Oh, another thing. Arcane
for that.
Arcane Kids. The guys who made game I talked about a while ago.
Did they make Dishonored Kids?
Yeah, they made Dishonored Kids.
Dishonored Babies.
They made that. I'm sorry, my kid's banging at my door here.
Zenith. Is that the one?
Yep. Yeah, I mean,
it was like a free running game.
Oh, the Bubsy, yeah. They made Bubsy 3D.
Let's all speculate on what Brian was going to tell us about Arcane Kids.
Well, before they the kid made... busted into his room.
Well, right now I'm thinking about how Dishonored Kids would work, and that sounds like an amazing game that needs.
Everybody would have really large heads.
Yeah,
that'd be awesome. You know what? Every developer needs to bring back big head mode.
Yeah, I mean, it was actually like it's one of those things where like GoldenEye didn't take shit seriously as everyone took GoldenEye. So having this stuff like big head mode made like it completely broke the game, and I think that's why no one does it anymore. It's like, oh, we got to rework all these hitboxes, and it, like this is gonna be just a joke thing.
That's because everybody got real serious about multiplayer. It's like multiplayer in GoldenEye used to be you and three people you actually know sitting in your own living room.
And by the way, you can tell where all your friends are at on the map at any given time.
Yeah.
So why are you worried about competition?
Though Uncharted 2 had, what was it, Donut Drake? Like the really fat Drake.
No, I never played big multiplayer on that.
It wasn't multiplayer. It was just normal single player that you could go through as a fat Drake.
Oh, fuck. Wow. Is it Uncharted 2? Yeah. Because I never got to that mode.
Yeah, I think it's you have to beat the game on normal.
I did that. I didn't play through it on hard just to get all the artifacts.
All right, let's forget about Drake. Did you forget about Drake?
I forgot about Donut Drake.
Anyways, so Arcane Kids made that Bubsy 3D and like the art of Terrell or whatever. It is an art game, crazy, super weird. But they also made Perfect Stride. That was the name of the game I'm thinking of, which was part of this LA Game Space bundle. And Perfect Stride is really, really good. There's such a good sense of momentum in that game. So anyways, check it out. And they made this this Dark Souls like ambient sound like loop. So basically, if you go to, I don't know what the URL is. It's ambient Dark Souls, visual field recordings from the world of Dark Souls. So they have like just hour long loops of, you know, like a screenshot or maybe video of a certain location in Dark Souls and just that audio from that location. So like, you know, water from a waterfall, storm clouds rolling in, and they're just like a ton of different locations and it's super good. So, like, I don't know, if you're just looking to be moody some night, put that on.
It's reminding me that today, like, Jeremy Tessier has been posting pictures of Chick Tracts all day.
Yeah.
So it occurred to me that we should totally make a Dark Souls Chick Tract a series of them.
What is a Chick Tract?
You don't know what a Chick Tract is. Mark, do you want to explain this one?
Spell it.
Chick. Jack, their name for Jack Chick, who is I don't know if he started off insane, but now he's insane fundamentalist who releases you've seen them. You know what we're talking about. There's these cheaply made rectangular pamphlets, and inside is like the most insane, like anti-Catholic and anti-Catholic, like religious.
Well, anti everything except Protestants.
Yeah, he hates everyone, everything except Protestants, and they're horrifying, but they're also hilarious if you're actually like able to like step away from it for a little bit. And yeah, Chick Track.
And he's been doing them for like 50 years. Yeah, they're amazing.
And, like he's gone through like four different artists at this point, and you can actually tell like the different like eras by the quality of the art.
So my idea is to do this, but with Dark Souls rule.
Okay, I'm down for that. Okay, yeah, that's...
We just need to find someone who can draw.
If only we knew someone who could draw Mike Lemieux.
Can we just take a screenshot? That's a lot easier than having somebody draw something.
That's true.
But that like really creepy art is part of the thing. Like you need that whole thing of like the extremely detailed children that are just clearly devilish.
Extremely extremely detailed. Oh, I feel gross. Just extremely detailed children.
Now just check out that little girl's face in like the third panel.
I'm not gonna check out that little girl's face, Mark.
It's kind of horrifying.
Go.
Or like the sixth one. It's like all scrolled up.
Yeah, that's it.
I no longer want any part of extremely detailed children. All right. Stop it. Cthulhu chick track. Stop it. Go. Who will be eaten first?
All right. We got to take a break while you read the D&D one at least.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a break and then we'll come back and we'll talk about Escape Goat.
All right. Break.
Break.
We're back, and I couldn't think of any funny escape goat things to bring us back, but we're back. And Dave's pick for Litter's Book Club was Escape Goat by Magical Time Bean, the Ian Stocker's one man studio, who recently put out Escape Goat 2, and that was through kind of Double Fine's initiative, indie initiative. Did that have a name from Double Fine?
I don't think it has a name. I think they're basically just letting some local indies use their studio space, and then putting their name on the game when it comes out, right, just as an extra push and, right, you know, making a Double Fine video of silliness.
Right. With Tim Schafer being silly, which is just unheard of.
No, he's totally serious all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just all the time. Did you guys listen to the Tone Control, Steve Gander's Tone Control conversations with video game developers with Tim Schafer?
I've never heard of it.
Oh, well, I've heard that one. Steve Gander has a podcast called Tone Control, which I'm convinced he must have, after he came on with us, our sideburn conversations with video games developers. I'm just kidding. Anyways, so it was really, really good. If you played adventure games as a kid, definitely listen to it. Like, I was just giddy the whole time listening to Steve and Tim Schafer talk. So anyways, but we're here to talk about Escape Goat. Dave, why'd you pick Escape Goat?
Well, I mean, in part I picked it because Escape Goat 2 was out, and also because it's a game that I like to share with people whenever I can.
Cool.
Because it's a pretty approachable puzzle game. There aren't a lot of complex puzzles or puzzles that really should leave you thinking for too long. Maybe there's half a dozen in the game, so it's approachable. And you know, it's one of my favorite games of 2011. So bring it back from the dead whenever I can.
Yeah,
it was definitely fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. So yeah, the introduction of new sort of puzzle elements are kind of there, and then they're just long enough, and then, you know, they kind of go away for that section. I mean, the game is set up in such a way that it lends itself well to that, with the kind of the hub world, and then you kind of span out to the different six level sets, so you can save the souls of sheep.
There's only one time I felt like it didn't explain something to me well enough before I saw it, which maybe I was just doing things out of order, but I went to some level that had invisible blocks. Like, you can go through them, but they still stack things on there. And it took me a while to figure out what those were.
Yeah.
And so that stage took me a good couple of minutes.
The only thing I caught that they didn't explain very well was how you can destroy wooden blocks using teleportation power.
Yeah.
And it was on actually that
same stage.
That same stage. And like, I just assume, oh, if I appear like on the side of these stacks, apparently destroys wooden blocks. That's a weird side effect. I don't know why that would have.
Right. So one of the mechanics in the game is that if you get a specific power up, a hat with a feather in it, you are a goat, and one of your friends is a mouse that comes around and helps you out. And if you have this specific hat, you can swap places with the mouse. And
only kind of in some levels, it's not like a...
Right, yeah, it's not a permanent power-up. And so, like, whatever's in between those two points on the map, you know, like, your character becomes a little, you know, a light orb and zooms over to the other side. And anything in that path gets destroyed is what Mark's talking about right now.
So I really do like that game, but each section is really short.
It is. Like, I would be surprised, like, wow, I'm already on room six?
That's it's interesting because, like, there's six levels and there's, like, one board that introduces all the elements. So there's really three.
And the sixth isn't really a level because the sixth level is always just, you're just there and you go to the ship.
Yeah.
Which is fun because, I mean, there's like...
Yeah, it's totally okay, fine.
Yeah, there's, like, four, like, real level, like, real puzzles in each one, but there's, like, nine different puzzle rooms.
But you know what? I can dig that because each section kind of has a theme. Yeah. And no theme ever wears out its welcome.
Yeah. Right, right. That's
these are my ideas, and you're just done. And you don't take like more than an hour to figure out. So,
I know you talked about visually you had some an error, like with the invisible blocks or something. And it's funny because I first played the second game when that came out, Escape Go 2. I talked about it a couple casts ago. So I had already played quite a bit of Escape Go 2 before I played this first one. And the first one, Escape Go, is kind of, you know, lo-fi pixel art graphics, which looks great. It's fine.
Going back to the first game, do you know more about like the deep escape goat lore, where you completely
so in the second game? In the first one, you are a goat escaping a dungeon. In the second one, you are also a goat escaping a dungeon.
Escape goat lore wise, I like there's a little line at the beginning like you were imprisoned for magic, and I thought it was funny because like. The witches that were, you know, they got imprisoned for supposed witchery were considered scapegoats for the larger problems.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. But anyway, so like in one of the first sets of levels, there, you know, like if it's a location where a block can move onto or off of it, there's like this kind of slightly grayed over like gear tile. The whole game is sort of made up of tiles and squares.
It's a lot of it feels like circuitry in that, you know.
Right. But no. So there's this one level where you open this path up. And so it opens up, but the background is still all these gears. It took me like two games or, you know, two retries of that level before I noticed, oh, I can just jump up through that path. I don't have to try to figure out some elaborate way to leave my mouse friend there and then teleport to him so I can get to the door to escape. So I just want to say that, like, visually, the second game is just really, really beautiful. I mentioned it the first time I talked about it, but it's clear that Ian Stocker really paid a lot more kind of close detail and attention to the visuals of the game and making stuff like that more just visually clear. Because some of that stuff isn't just intuitive, but in the second game, that problem is completely eliminated.
It's definitely strange, the visual difference between the first game and the second game, because I've seen videos of Escape Goat 2 long before I saw this, and I kind of expected this to look the same. It's sort of like... It's like the difference between Spelunky and Spelunky HD, kind of.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Yeah, I mean, the second game is just beautiful. It's really...
Would I be interested in knowing, like, how much influence he had, if any, if he had never even heard of this game entirely, by something called Dark Castle for the Sega Genesis. It was also, like, a single-screen, like, puzzle-solving thing where you're trying to get, like, from... You were stuck in a dungeon too, and you're just trying to like get to a key or like do something in like this specific room. But the aesthetic, like the lo-fi pixel art sort of thing, and just the I guess like the atmosphere feels a lot like the same.
Yeah,
I would say like, I mean, this is just a total shot in the dark, but this is the closest inspiration I would think of for this would be Milan's Secret Castle on the NES. Because it's very, very similar.
Oh. Mm-hmm. It is, yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the last time I played a game like this, like a single screen puzzle platformer. I think there must have been some sort of, you know, free indie game, Boulder Dash like that I played a while ago, I want to say. But it was just really refreshing. Yeah. No, it wasn't. No.
There's definitely like shades of Meat Boy in here too, a little. Like there's a decent bit of execution in
Chip's what you challenge. Do. Sorry.
Yeah, certain levels, yeah. Definitely there are execution, timing puzzles, execution puzzles, yeah.
Like the one I got frustrated on, which wasn't to say it's like, you know, a bad puzzle or a bad game, it's just like that was the thing, it was like, nope, I'm done, was this level of just phantoms on both sides and exploding blocks the entire way.
Yeah, I just like, looked at that to say, okay, I'm done for the night, I'll come back to you later.
Yeah, there is a single enemy type in the game, and it kind of walks back and forth, and then if it sees you... or your mouse on the horizontal plane that it is on, it'll fire a fireball in that direction. So sometimes you have to use that to destroy blocks or ignite fire barrels or something like that. You know, an extra mechanic. But, you know, you don't have to kill them. You know, I think there are times that you can crush them with a boulder or something like that.
There's a couple levels where you cannot saw blades after them.
You cannot directly attack them, though.
Right. I tried. I got killed.
Yeah, you tried to ram them.
You were trying to headbutt them. Yeah.
Also, just like I immediately love any game where I get to double jump and then like air dash.
Yeah,
that's the best feeling. And thank you for letting us do that.
I kind of wonder if sometimes that broke some of the execution. Like maybe I was doing things I shouldn't have been able to do. Because, like, I forget what stage it was. It was, like, there was a little small tunnel you were in at the beginning, and, like, you had to hit switches and, like, drop the mouse in just in time. And it was something like you had to get to the far right for another switch. And I wasn't sure if I actually had to be using those blocks on the right and, like, right. breaking some of the boxes. Because I just managed to jump my way up there.
Yeah, there was one or two times where it was like, oh, really? There's some buttons over there, but I can just smash this crate and get to the door. All right, let's do that. It's fine.
Which, I mean, that's not, you know, that's not destroying the puzzle design or anything. That's just, you know, using the game's options, too.
Yeah. But, I mean you go ahead.
Yeah, you're not judged on, like, how you solve a puzzle, so it's not like you, like, get extra stars for, like, not killing.
Are there leaderboards or anything?
I can't imagine why you'd have them.
Speed, I would guess?
Not sure.
I'm not sure. There might be an Escape Goat 2. If there is, it would be like, you know, how many deaths before game completion or something like that. But I'm not 100% sure.
I'd like to see speed run. Yeah, like, I'm sure once you figure out all the puzzle solutions, it's probably really quick. Yeah. But I'd still like to see what interesting things people can do, like how quickly they can do it.
Yeah. There are speed runs. There are definitely speed runs. In fact, Ian is participating, I think, this week in a speed run for Escape Goat 2 against a lot of Escape Goat 1 speed runners.
They're doing a grid math.
Yeah. I think the first day the game was out, I was following Randy O'Connell, which is the guy that actually did the art. For Escape Goat 2.
Cool. Yeah.
I was following him and O'Connor. And he said somebody had already, within an hour of the game coming out, had already beat it in like half an hour. And the dev's best time was like 42 minutes.
See, I have such a hard time doing, like, the first time I play a game, I take my sweet goddamn time. I'm like inspecting every detail. I'm like looking, it's like, oh, is there a secret over here? I mean, with a game like this, it's a little easier to kind of go through. Maybe a little fast, but I still go at my own pace. But like with something like, Deus Ex Human Revolution, like I'm looking at the fucking package of eyeballs on the table. I'm like, oh man, eyeballs on the table.
NPC's telling you, hey, we need to go ahead and get out of the office right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, but no, it's everything about the game is very, 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 very tight. I mean, the controls, it's such a simple set of mechanics. Like there's not a lot you have to worry about. You can jump again in midair. You can dash. And, you know, that's like, as far as maneuvers that the goat can do, that's it. You can jump twice.
Yeah, you do a fair bit of platforming just with those elements.
Right, just basic platforming. And, and then, of course, you have the mouse. And, I mean, he really kind of just drilled down those mechanics into all the possible kind of puzzles that you can do. I mean, of course, including environmental, puzzle elements as well, like blocks falling, switches, some timing, conveyor belts.
It kind of reminds me of Gunpoint in a certain way. Like,
right, well, just... yeah, I was going to... And both Gunpoint and I'd even say, like, some Flambeer games, like Luftrausers, are very just kind of condensed experiences, just very, very focused. And the same for Gunpoint. It's just this one set of...
Just do one thing, say what you're going to say, and
exactly.
Out.
And do it really, really well. I mean... Yeah. You know, not like we're going to see, like, all right, now this is the first person level in Escape Goat is play from first person perspective and then just shoot guys. You wouldn't see that. But so it's very, very tight, very condensed. And yeah, I mean, it's been so long since I've just kind of played something like that. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed just playing like a nice puzzle platformer single screen that I could just kind of take my time, work through, do a couple puzzles here, a couple puzzles there, and not really worry about some, you know, huge narrative that I had to pay attention to.
I will say that, like, the dialogue from the sheep actually kind of remind, like, I don't know if this is just the immediate thing I leap to, but reminding of Link's Awakening a little bit. Like, every time you meet an NPC that, like, you know, you're closer to solving the Windfish riddle, they always say little, really cryptic things.
Right, it's something a little cryptic, a little mystical.
Yeah, like a sheep would say, like, oh, well, if someone escapes the prison, it'll just collapse. It's like, that's a weird thing to tell me.
Like, are you trying to get me to just stop playing? All right, fine, I'll stop climbing the tower. Jeez, I'll quit the game.
Well, sometimes they would say, oh, some of us really want to be here and never wanted to leave at all. So stop, you asshole.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious if there's a plot twist, like, you're just a goat trying to escape benevolent farmer or something.
He's like, look, man, I'm a goat, all right? I'm going to get out of here.
Look, man, we're sheep. This is a good deal for us. What are you doing?
Come on, sheeple.
kind of actually the interaction where like the NPCs like that, where they just give me like little cryptic pieces of information. It's a lot like Echo the Dolphin in that way.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Echo creeped me out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, I played it and loved it as a kid, and looking back on it, it was really weird. It was really like the aliens, and that was really bizarre. But so how many of you guys have played Escape Goat 2?
Not I, but I probably will.
I know you said you watched some stuff.
Yeah.
And Dave, maybe you've played more of Escape Goat 2 to answer this question more. I mean, Escape Goat 2 just seems kind of a new puzzle set and higher res graphics. I mean, there's not a lot new, which is fine. I mean, you know, if you look at...
They don't need to reinvent the wheel here.
No, exactly. Yeah. Which I think is good that he didn't try to.
Yeah, all I really know is that there are more hats that do different things.
There are.
Yeah, I've got about 40 minutes into it, just through the first maybe 6 or 10 levels. But I am told more hats.
I did hit the super hat for the mouse that like lets him fly across a chasm.
I never saw that. The most soul crushing thing was the first time you get a hat and like you go through a door. It's like, oh, I guess the hats disappear when you go through a door. It's like, no.
Damn, these hat stealing doors. That's the most heinous magical thing about this tower is that there are hat stealing doors.
Yeah. Because he looks so dapper in that hat.
He does. It's a good
hat. Mouse looks good. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, another thing that I always, you know, this is a good example. Part of the reason also that I picked this, I mean, you know, there are a lot of reasons. It's $5. It takes about 2 hours to complete, you know, in generally. But, you know, it's a really, really good example of a one-man show. I mean.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely.
He did music, sound effects, art, programming, everything.
Well, and it all fits together so well. I mean, especially like the first game, the visuals are there and they're good. In the second game, it really gets nailed down. But the music is really excellent as well. It's just kind of gothic, mystical. Yeah.
Yeah, he has a very specific style with his music. Other games by Magical Time being a Soulcaster 1 and 2, which predate Escape Goat. It's all very, I was listening to the soundtracks of those a couple weeks ago, and it's like coming home again in terms of that Escape Goat music. Like, oh yeah, right. I know this sort of synth, you know, spooky synth heavy, you know,
gothic,
sort of 80s inspired gothic, you know, new age music. Yeah, I know this. And then in 2, he just continues that same arc and getting even better, higher quality samples, you know, and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, it's just a great example of a one man studio making a game, you know, a game that was successful enough that, you know, Escape Goat 2 is not a one-man project. You know, he does have an artist
he's
on that.
He's able to source some of that out. And
I'm interested to try Escape Goat 2. Like, after I beat this game, I'll probably end up buying that or the next sale or something.
I mean, even just visually, I'd say it's worth it. I mean, you're going to get a lot of the same gameplay, new puzzles, you know, to kind of stump yourself. But yeah, I mean, it's the perfect game that you can buy, enjoy the music and the visuals, and just kind of take your time as you work through, you know, just do a couple levels at a time. You know, in between waiting for your matches of, I don't know, whatever you're playing right now.
Yeah. Like, I think it would be like, I don't say this very often, but I think it would be a very good 3DS or Vita game.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, no, those games absolutely lend themselves well.
I think probably he developed it for X and A. So I don't know if that's holding him back or if it's just not an option he's ever even considered.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's obviously what the most familiar with. At least for this. So is he working on anything else now that, I mean, has he said he's working on anything else now that Escape Goat 2 is out the door?
I don't think that he has, but I'm sure he must be. I mean, I did hear he put up a blog post, something about, you know, the next project. And I don't think he was very specific. He said, you know, wait for the PR cycle to wind down with Escape Goat 2. So, you know, I think there are a lot of people talking about Soulcaster 3, which, you know, Soulcaster is a great, it's a great game. It's sort of like, it's kind of like Gauntlet in its view, but it's like a hybrid strategy RPG where you play a wizard who actually, instead of having magical, and you're not really a wizard because you don't really have any magical powers other than the ability to summon others to fight for you. So you don't get to throw any cool spells.
Yeah, well, that's sort of like I'm just thinking of because I played some of Julian Gollop's Chaos Reborn when the Kickstarter was running, which is over now and it met its goal. And that's the same thing. You're a wizard. You do have like some magic missile attacks, but most of your stuff is summoning, you know, enemy, orcs and eagles and lions and whatever to fight for you.
Yeah, and then this has that it's layer of strategy on it. You know, you have a essentially a blocker, you have a lobber who can lob things over, and you have an archer who can shoot across pits and stuff like that. So you're setting up your defenses in almost a tower defense-esque way and trying to get through. And that was those games were reasonably popular, and there's been some demand for a third, so that might be the direction he's going in, but, you know, who can say?
I mean, if he did the same treatment for Escape Go 2 from one that he did with a, you know, if he did that with a new Soulcaster, yeah, I think that would do very well. And especially now that he's got kind of, you know, the Double Fine name doing, gets that is some goodwill his way. And I hope Escape Go 2 is doing well. I think from what I've seen that a lot of people like it. So it'll be good. It'll be interesting to see what he's working on next. You should give us the exclusive, the Nightbreed.com exclusive.
Yes, Ian.
Exclusive interview.
So Escape Go 2 verdict, really good game.
Yeah, really good game. A good game. A good go game.
So you're next, Belita.
I am next. I didn't know. I didn't realize. No, wait, isn't Matt next? Matt's next.
Oh, Matt. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Like, I don't. No one in this podcast.
The alphabet. Yeah, Dave. You've really, with your own name, you've really just thrown a wrench in things, man.
I'm sorry. So sorry.
You're next, Pierce.
Yeah, Pierce is next. We'll probably have to determine that at a later date. Unless you just know this was coming,
and I still could not think of anything.
That's all good.
It can't be Gran Turismo again. I mean, I wish it could be, but it can't be.
We'll post that. I still need to make a an actual Literature Book Club page on the new site, just so we can list it and, you know, people can see what game we're playing next and whatever. I used to have it in the sidebar, but obviously the format of the front page has changed quite a bit.
We'd have to go through and figure out what we did. And
yeah, it's pretty easy. I mean, if I just did a search for illiterate on the site.
Hopefully I put that in every time it's mentioned.
I think so. We determine one way or another. So so we'll let y'all know what the next Lotus Book Club play.
I wanted to mention this Kickstarter because I forgot to mention it earlier, but it's called Heartforth Alicia.
I saw that. It's already met its goal and it looks really, really.
It's more than doubled its goal now, I think.
Really?
Oh no, it's crazy. Almost doubled its goal. But it looks really cool.
Holy shit! They've slammed their goal.
Pretty.
Yeah,
that is so pretty.
It looks very pretty. Really, really pretty. Yeah,
and they've already confirmed the PS4 port, and so.
Oh, that's awesome! That's super cool for them.
So if it's got a PS4 port, it probably has a Vita port.
And they're working on Vita and Wii U soon. Okay.
Jesus Christ, that's pretty crazy. That's really neat. It looks super good. A lot of love and attention there. So so thanks again to Ian for giving us Escape Go keys and letting us play that. I think I've already bought it and Dave's already bought it, but I think we'll probably all be buying Escape Go 2 and playing that, because I still need to finish it, because I was playing, it's like, maybe I'll finish Escape Go 2 before I play Escape Go 1, and everyone told me to stop, and so I did.
I feel like there's sometimes an urge, like if we know a developer is going to be listening or they did us a favor, we kind of want to say good things about their game, but it just helps that Escape Goat's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for picking a good game, Dave.
Yeah.
Continue to do so.
So far, you've got 100% ratio on good game picks. None of us have that still.
Oh, man. Did any of us pick just bad games?
I think early on.
I picked Assassin's Creed, the first one.
Yes.
Oh, what did you pick, Mark? What did you say?
I enjoyed God's Hand. I may be the only
It's a good game.
It's two of us.
I didn't hate it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think maybe after one full cycle, you know, so once maybe Matt does his and it loops back around to me, maybe in between we should have a 1 week palate cleanser where we just pick a bad game and play it.
That's how I play my games normally.
They'll
just take a bad game occasionally, be like, I wonder what this is. Neverdead sitting in shrink wrap just for that situation.
Speaking of which, GameStop had a buy two get one free on their $20 stuff.
A BOGO.
Yeah, a BOGO. So
that's
B2Go.
Oh no, it's a BOGTO.
BOGTO. Anyway, that long story short, I own Lollipop Chainsaw. That's probably a bad video game, but
it's not super awful. Not great, but
I like the developer. It's stuff I like in it, so I got to try it.
Yeah, I think as long as you go in with the knowledge that it's super parody. And none of it's meant to be taken seriously.
Yeah, see, what was the other game like that he made with EA that I can't remember the name of?
Shadows of the Damned.
Shadows of the Damned. If it's at that level, I am perfectly fine with this.
It roughly is, yeah.
Good. Yeah. I'm happy.
What's, I do the same thing with movies. Like I'll watch, you know, some good movies, and then it's like, you know what, I just need a shitty horror movie that I can sit and watch. Yeah. And I love it. I love watching shitty horror movies. And
oh, by the way, Brian, I started playing Punch Quest on Android.
Cool. Yeah.
I don't like digital buttons.
Oh yeah.
You'll get used to it. No, it's not really digital buttons. It's got a jump button and it's got a punch.
Right. I was gonna say, do they actually on the Android version? Do they actually have like on screen?
No, I mean it's just occasionally there'll be a thing like, oh, I really wanted to uppercut there and it didn't do it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not gonna be punch, precise. So you
Punch
have to
Quest is by Rocket Cat Games.
Yeah.
And they made probably the best iOS like ARPG called Mage Gauntlet. And the control screen for that, they nailed really well for an iOS device.
It's another thing I didn't finish because I don't like.
Yeah, I didn't. Oh, well, yeah. I mean,
I think their games are fine. I wish they put them somewhere that I can play them.
Their new game called Wayward Saga is coming out soon. I think on the 24th, and that apparently is coming to PC, which I didn't realize. And that's another sort of top-down action RPG. This one's sort of like a roguelike, so I guess there's going to be some sort of procedural generation, and it looks really good. I mean, all of the Rocket Cat games have just been really good. A lot of attention to detail, music just knocked out of the park. You know, kind of similar pixel art style across them all. But I really like them. I really like the developers, so I'm looking forward to that. Yep.
All right.
So that's it. That's a wrap. Thanks for listening, everybody. Go play Escape Goat. It's super fun, and Escape Goat 2.
It's not bad.
Jesus Christ, Mark.
I was going to make a greatest of all time joke, but now I'm just going to be sick.
It's the number one. I'd say it's the number one goat game that is out right now.
Has anyone made Escape Goat puzzles in Goat Simulator? Like, because it seems feasible to do that.
That's way too meta, but somebody has to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. You've been challenged, Internet.
Yep. Do it. Make it happen. Yeah.
Bye.
Bye, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.